don't have any cardinal planets, so beginnings I never really like very much. Beginnings of anything. Middles and ends of time are the beginnings. So I sort of wander around for a bit, so I'll get to do that for a bit. Now, shall I just sort of see what happens?
Yes.
Can you see clearly?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The image of this is so fabulous that I've got for you today. This is the 17th century tapestry. Apparently it was on a book that Patrick Walker wrote, and I found it on the web. And the guy didn't know anything about it. All he knew, and he searched and searched and searched, and it was just on something Patrick Walker wrote on the stars, you know, a long time ago. But I thought it was beautiful. And I thought, and when I was preparing this, I was running several levels at once. I'll have to tell you as I go along what they are. You'll see as I'm going along. So I'm trying to, I want to end up looking at this year a bit, because I think it's a very interesting and complex year. And navigating it is a particular piece of work, I think. For some people, it'll be fine, you know. But anyone who has any degrees of early mutable aspects, or anybody mutable degrees, or anybody who has Saturn-Neptune aspects, it's going to set it off. And I think it's really useful to think about Saturn-Neptune aspects as you're entering them, or when you're in them. They're very interesting, and very complex, and not easy to navigate if you're just hoping to clunk along. So what happened is I started in the library where I go every Tuesday, looking at old images and finding that I went on the web and everything. And I thought, well, it's very interesting. This is a 6th century synagogue. And on the website it says something about it may have been a zodiac. It said something about like early synagogues always had astrological themes the way through, and I was just fascinated by how astrology has given itself the opportunity for such art. I mean, everything does. Life gives itself the opportunity, and artists are just artists. But some of the astrological art has been astounding, and. This one I put up, and I was thinking, when I was looking at it, how can I justify putting it up? You know, it's the Earth-centered cosmos. And after the end of the Earth-centered cosmos, astrology was one of the things that got into trouble after that, because, oh, well, you think the Earth is the center. But I was thinking to myself the morning when I kept it in, I thought, but we're still person-centered. As a species, we center on ourselves. And that's why we haven't changed the language. We still say the sun rises and the sun sets. We still see ourselves as the center of the cosmos. We know it's not true. But we see ourselves that way because as a species, we are... somebody gave me... And then I was in the Warburg yesterday, and somebody was doing an article, and she did her PhD on something, and she said she found it very interesting that we are really, in fact, homocentric. And I said, that's what I was thinking this morning. And so it's very hard for us to get away from the sense that we are the center of the universe. Personally, particularly in the West, you know, a lot of you know I've lived in Africa with tribal people, and it's not the same. The people that I lived with did not see themselves as the center. They saw themselves in a different way, and I never understood it. And we always had interesting conversations to try and bridge that gap or understand something. And I have a feeling there are many, many cultures that are not this culture, the Western culture, let us call it, where this is not the center. So each of you there is the center. And for periods of time, we lose that center. And sometimes we lose it in sorrow, but often we lose it in joy. So we're with a group of people, or we're in the woods, we're by the sea, and suddenly there's no... And that we call, in other languages, in other times, it was a mystical experience. And now we call it different things because we live in a secular material world. But we need it. Without it, life is very mundane. Yeah. So we are homocentric. But something is seeking something else quite often. And that's just because it's beautiful. Now, this, I in my library, it's an ancient medieval library. It's a medieval library. So I find these images. This is Saturn. Isn't that just something? He looks so weary. It's something about as Saturn is very satisfied because he eats time the way he eats children. Something really arming and heavy and Saturnian. And the reason I'm bringing Saturn in this, because as I was going along, I was thinking, well, what has art done when it's looked at astrology? And I started thinking about Saturn, because Saturn is so key since Pluto went into Capricorn in 2008. And yes, we've had it in mutual reception in Scorpio for the last couple of years, where it's been really serious. And now it's moved into Sag for a while, and back to Scorpio, then back into Sag. And so we're still in the density of Saturn being so... as long as Pluto's in Capricorn, Saturn is more... demands more attention than it does normally, I would say. So I was wondering if you just think Arsus is Dante. And I mean Arsus in the sense of creators. And I thought, well, the astrology has had Saturn until recently pretty much awful. You know, I wrote to Dorian Greenbow and I said, did any of them say anything nice about Saturn? And she wrote back and gave me two lines, one by Valens and the other by Ptolemy. I always say his name as if he's Greek, but he's fully Ptolemy. And she said, Valens says, it puts into one's hand, Saturn, great ranks and distinguished positions, supervision, management of others' property, and the fathership of others' children. I'm really interested in that. But I think it means that when there are widows in the village, takes responsibility. And Ptolemy said, Saturn, strong-minded and deep thinkers. But pretty much, other than that, Saturn's malefic. Isn't it interesting? And yet, in the literature, that's not necessarily the case. And I got obsessed with Dante a few years ago because of the course I did, and then I did it again because it was so good, and I'm going to do it again because I've asked them to do it again just because it's so good. And the seventh heaven, he puts astrologers in Inferno, without question. But in Paradiso, he has the heavens aligned with the planets. And the seventh heaven is Saturn's heaven. I just think that's so good. And Dante meets Beatrice there, coming out of Jupiter's heaven, and she says, I do not smile now, because if I smiled here, you would be destroyed. And there's a great ladder that goes up to the Imperium from Saturn's heaven that he is allowed to climb. But I want to read you, I don't usually have notes on that because I get so lost in them, but I should be able to do this sometimes. But yes, two things were interesting. He meets a contemplative. It's the heaven of the contemplatives. And he meets a contemplative called Pygmalion, who lived in the time in the 11th century when Pluto was in Capricorn and Neptune was in Pisces. Same for us today. And it says a lot of things. It's beautiful. You can go on. It's Canto 21 and 22 in Paradiso. And you can just look online. You can find it. It's quite beautiful. It's quite surprising. But there's one thing that I thought was really interesting. He says, Peter, Pygmalion, forcibly instructs Dante to instruct others, when he goes back to life, that God's ways are ultimately cut off from human understanding and even from that of the angels, and should therefore not be probed without measure. I thought that was really interesting. Because this constant demanding that we have, why isn't it different? It should be different. Now we think it's the government or the corporations or... No, but we used to think it was God, but there's this, it has to be different. And I thought in Saturn's realm, it's something about being, when you're doing Saturn well, there is, exalted in Libra, a kind of peace or equilibrium. When you say, okay, I will just do this, then it's fine. It's the disturbance and the wanting other things that makes life so difficult so often. But when you're in relationship with the work that you're asked to do, there's peace. And so I thought that was really interesting. This hungering after is so not Saturnian, and wanting it to be different, wanting it to be easier, wanting it not to be so hard. I thought that was interesting. That's Botticelli's version. Can you see that, or is it too faded? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay. The next one I looked at was Chaucer. Because in the Knight's Tale, I love Chaucer, but I don't like the Canterbury Tales very much. I don't know. But I like other things he's written. In the Knight's Tale, we have Saturn and Mars, and really horrible. You know, Saturn is beyond breath horrible. But listen to this. Okay. Saturn and Mars take him on disastrous journeys, and it's, you know, just everything. It's strangling, drowning, imprisonment, poisoning, every kind of vengeance. But Saturn's disasters represent a kind of correction or balancing of the scale, ensuring that everything is overturned and transformed by the passage of time. And in Chaucer, the astrologers were, Saturn was a monster, it was everything bad. But the artists are saying something else, or the creators, the writers. Do you, any of you know Christine de Pizan? Google her. Christine de Pizan. She's a writer. Her father was an astrologer for the king in France. And she married someone that she'd loved since she was 10. And she married him probably when she was 15. And he died at 25. And she had to take care of her mother, her brother, and her children. And she was neglected by the court after that, when her father died. That happened all the time. There were no pensions, really, though she got one later. So she went off and somebody said, start writing, you're really good at it. And she started writing, and in the 14th century, she's one of the great writers. And she challenged some of the troubadour epics, Roman de la Rose. She got herself in a little bit of trouble, but she was impeccable. So in the end, she was honored greatly by all the great and the good. And in one of her, in something called A Letter from Some Goddess, or Theo, to Hector, this is about knights again, she wrote that she said that Saturn was the model of discretion. Saturn as the model of discretion counsels those below not to speak too much. So again, in her, she's profoundly Christian. These people are seriously Christian in a way that we can't even imagine. I don't mean in a cult sense, that was interesting, but I mean in the sense that as we believe in the secular material world without even knowing it, so they believed in the hierarchy in the Middle Ages and early Renaissance, particularly in the hierarchy of values that was dominant in that time, which had to do with the church, in our culture. So then we get to, and I'm sort of finishing with two people, we get Marsilio Ficino, who is an astrologer, and as many of us know, he's the one that said, wait a minute. And he had Saturn on the ascendant in Aquarius, and Moon in Capricorn, opposite Pluto, but he didn't know that. And he was Scorpio, and he was a misery guts of the best order in the entire world. He had Jupiter in the 7th house in Leo. So everybody else was wonderful, and he was like terrible. But he was really wonderful. And he said, Saturn seems to have impressed the seal of melancholy on me from the beginning. But what he did was revision Saturn. And he said things like, when you're having a very, and he's right to the king and popes and everybody, and when you're having a very bad Saturn aspect, you have two choices. One is to go into the study and work. And the other is to go into Jupiter's realm and wear bright colors and play the lyre. And he said, one thing you shouldn't do is go to Venus's realm. And talk about a creative astrologer, an astrologer's artist. One of the things he said, and I'll never get over this, I spent a lot of years reading him, but he said, Venus is but Diana to me. And the notion that Venus, I don't know what Venus thought of that, really, because the idea that she was a virgin goddess. But he sort of changed the structure, he brought it to another level. And then, of course, we have Liz, who wrote Saturn in 1976. And for my generation, I was in Africa when I read it. I found it in a bookshop. I read it and I said, this person knows everything I'm thinking. Or I know everything she's, I have to go north. So I had to come up just to see that people were writing that way. Because a whole generation was starting to think a particular way, and she was articulating it. And so for her, what she did with Saffron is change it. In a sense that a lot of it came from just before the theosophy schools that all, you know, generated. We were all influenced by that in the 60s when we were studying. But it's as if something new was rising about how to live with Saturn. And it was coming through, as I was saying, it came through the art more than the astrology, and then it hit the astrology. That's just a pretty picture again. It's the personification of astrology. Now, I want to, again, if you don't see them, it doesn't matter because I want to make reference, do them brighter. I'm going to show you a few artists, and I'm going to use their words. What I did was follow a trail. I didn't start on purpose. I just was following a trail. I put in Google art artists, and then I found a quote, and I went, that's interesting. And then occasionally I'd do it again, and I'd find another one. And this is the second part of what I'm trying to say, that I was looking at artists saying, what is art? And seeing if any of them matched what we were doing. And this man said, art does not reproduce the visible, rather it makes visible. Art does not reproduce the visible, rather it makes visible. Just think about when you look at a chart. Art does not reproduce the visible, rather it makes visible. Can you see that face? Can you see his eyes? Yeah. No, I really want to know. I mean, because I was sitting back there and sometimes I couldn't see things. Okay, this is Paul Klee. Now look at that face and look at this chart. It makes visible. He's got, he's got sun and shadow, but this is what I'm looking at in the first part. Can you see that all?
Yeah.
Can you see this? The details? It's not blurry, is it? Is it blurry?
Good.
No.
Okay. Okay. Now that, look at this. So this is his chart. And that's his face. This is his ascendant, and that's his face. Now what happened when I was doing this is I noticed, I thought, oh, that's interesting, because there's a theme between Sagittarius and Pisces here. He's got Mercury and Sagittarius on the midheaven, and he's almost known for amongst artists, he's almost known for his writing on color theory than he is for his art. Well, that's not true. He's known for his art. But at the time he was living, he was known for his writing. And he taught himself. He wasn't good at color when he first started studying. And he went off to some place that had lots of color, Mediterranean, and he got obsessed. And after a period of time, he suddenly got it, color. And he said, I am color. Color is me. Now I am an artist. And the rest of his life, he was dealing with color, most of all. And what I thought is that he said, it makes visible. And I mean, every one of you who does charts, you see that the person come alive as you start reading. It's so alive. And it's not that it reproduces anything, it actually makes it visible. That art does not reproduce what we see, rather it makes us see. And one of the things I do, I always have this small computer when we're watching TV, my husband and I, because as soon as somebody comes on that's interesting, I have to see their chart. And I go, forever. Before, I used to have the ephemeris and look it up. I don't care if I love it when I know their time. But that's not important. I just, as I'm watching them, I want to see the chart. Because then I see something more. And he says, art does not reproduce what we see, rather it makes us see. This is the moon. This is the sun, rise, and this, well, sun over a town. And this is moonrise. And you know how art... I think David Hockney recently made me see in a way I'd never seen before. I went to the Royal Academy and saw his
the art he did on his iPad. Mm-hmm. Have any of you seen that stuff? If you're ever in a town where they do an exhibition, please go. I didn't like David Hockney much. I wasn't interested in him, but my God, did he change my eyes. And I thought I've been following artists forever, and I never thought he would do that. I can't go in the country without seeing what he taught me or what he showed us. So that's him. And I won't say too much more about that chart, but I'll just leave it. Yes, there were two things that were interesting. There was another thing that was interesting. Saturn, exactly semi-sextile Neptune, and Neptune conjunct Mars. Neptune conjunct Mars. And I find that he's very, very sensitive, this man. And he suffered for his sensitivity, of course. But this is the last thing he said. He has found his style when he cannot do otherwise. That's interesting. It's about lecturing. As an astrologer, for me, it's about lecturing, and it's about doing charms. There was a point at which, in Africa, I started doing charms in Africa, and learned it in America, when I realized that was it. And I could no more do it. Sometimes I try. Sometimes I think, look, I'm not going to do it that way this time. You know, I mean, I do charts every week. I make my living by it. And I'll think, well, I always sit them down, and I say, don't say anything, here's pen and paper, and I talk for 15 minutes and say everything I can see in the chart, then turn it off and say, does that make sense? Well, I try every other method that I can possibly do, and I can't do it. And every time I want to say, when they come back again and again, or if they do, I want to say, well, how can I be of use to you? In fact, I do say it. I say, how can I be of use to you? And they start talking, and I say, no, no, no. And I turn on the thing, and I have to say what I see before they tell me how I can be useful to them. I can't change it. And I would imagine all of you who have been doing charts more than 5 years, that's the way you do it. That's it. It's your style. That's just another pretty next person I looked at.
Yeah.
And this to me was actually the first one I saw. Clay I saw second. This, when I saw this, I knew, this is so faculty. Learn the rules like a pro, so you can break them like an artist. Inspiration exists, but it has to find you working. And I thought, I couldn't think of anything more faculty than this. Learn it like a pro. There's no place on earth, and I lecture in lots of places, that I think, well, I'm probably biased, but there's no place I've come across that teaches you so well every aspect of it. But then, after a period of time, you have to start playing. I just said that this morning. You have to start playing. And the other thing is work. And that's the thing. A couple of years ago, I was doing this, and somebody came up to me afterwards and said, she was young and beautiful, and she said, how do I become an astrologer like you? And I thought, get old enough. But I found every thought went, and I said, do charts every day, all the time, everyone you meet, everyone you see, every newspaper article, look at the chart, that time. And that's what this person said. It's got to find you working. Mm-hmm. Inspiration comes, but it's got to find you working. It doesn't matter if you see anything, you know anything. I don't analyze them. I just look. I don't do anything. When he was 13, he drew this. He had a father who was a painter and ended up teaching at a painting school and ended up being curator of the museum. And I think by the time he was 18, he had so many years of unbelievably rigorous, breathtaking, backbreaking training in classical drawing, painting. So he did this. He did that. He was 14 when he did this one. He was 15 when he did this one. And he was 16 when he did this one. Do any of you know who it is yet? 22 when he did this one. And he did it because a friend of his committed suicide, and he got very depressed, and he went into a period where everything was blue. In this period, he was 20, he was 28 when Saturn returned, and he was in his 50s for this one. This was 1937, he was nearly 60. He wasn't into politics at all until this, and he wasn't after either. He was old, He was 83 when he did this one. He was 81, I think, 7. No, sorry, I'm getting it wrong. He was born in 1881, so he was 90 when he did this, in 88 or something. Somebody said they thought it was of a hippie. Himself as a hippie. Did you see the flowers in his hair? He was really cynical, I think, about hippies. But then he was 90, you know? Get cynical about it. He said, if they took away my paints, I'd use pastels. If they took away my pastels, I'd use crayons. If they took away my crayons, I'd use pencils. If they stripped me naked and threw me in prison, I'd spit on my fingers and paint on the walls. And I remember saying that to someone in Africa. I'd been practicing for about 5 or 6 years. And we were slightly in dangerous territory. And I remember thinking, God, I'm going to end up in prison with scary planets in the vault. And I thought, what am I going to do? I'll have to have my ephemeris. And then I thought, well, and I asked someone, and he said, well, the sun will go by. You know, if you're not in solitary, at least you'll see the pattern on the wall. And I thought, I'll learn the pattern on the wall. And then I'll be able to at least see what's going on from day to day. But I'll at least be seeing the patterns of the sun on the wall. And then I said, what if I'm in solitary? I didn't sit in the dark. So I said, and then he said, well, there'd be ants that might go across the floor, and you could see the patterns from that. And so when he wrote this, not everyone is like this, because some people are artists, and some people are astrologers, and other parts of their lives are equally important. But some of you, you'd say this too. You'd find a way to read the patterns, no matter what.
I think him, he's nice.
Okay, what's interesting, he definitely, there was a period where we thought he had, I don't know, cancer rising up there. I don't know how it got there. But he's, you know, how could you think that about him? You're right. And what's interesting is that he's got Saturn. I mean, again, I wasn't tracking this, but he's got Saturn conjunct Neptune. And I'll show you him. And this bit of him, he used to go to bed depressed, and he'd stay for a week, and he'd fast. He'd have nothing except red wine and pasta. I like this guy. And he smoked till he was 96. I'm sorry, I don't smoke, but I still don't like everybody. So, I mean, Sun is Scorpio, Mercury is Scorpio. And the opposite, these Scorpio planets opposite, Neptune conjunct Saturn. Chiron, though, I don't know if Chiron was existing then, but I can't help putting out. And Jupiter conjunct Pluto. Four planets in Taurus, two in Scorpio. And then, to relieve it all, this beautiful moon in Sagittarius in the south sextile Venus. I know it's not politically correct to like him as a man, because he wasn't very nice to his women, but I would have been one of them. If you break your heart, you go on. Okay, now, because we're looking at this year, somehow this came into my hand. I've moved, and I'm looking for my books all the time, and I finally found a business book, because I thought, my God. And I didn't realize she'd written about Saturn Neptune, but just listen so far, artists and astrologers. Saturn Neptune contacts are important for an artist because they give him the freedom of the group feeling life. They give him the feeling of the group feeling life as a source of inspiration. Now, you may not have Saturn Neptune, but this year, Saturn and Neptune are in aspect most of it. You know? They only get exact at the end of the year, but they're square now. They're both in there, and both of them are Jupiter ruling at the moment. So I thought that was really interesting. I thought one of the ways of using that aspect is to recognize when you're swamped and you can't do anything, and you had so many plans you were going to do Saturn and Sagittarius, and suddenly, you can't. How do you stop and listen rather than fight against the impossibility or the overwhelmingness of whatever has come in? A precarious balance usually needs to be maintained so that the collective feelings do not swamp the personality. That definitely happens some of the time with Saturn Neptune aspect. The power of any work of art seems to lie in part in its capacity to evoke or constellate the collective psyche. And in acquiring this power, the artist must first sacrifice his personality as an isolated unit so that he can become at least partially an emissary or transmitter for group feeling. And I think that's what we do as astrologers as well. I think when you're doing a chart, and there's a point, I always can tell where my ego gets involved. I can tell after if I can't tell in the middle. Because it does, it gets, you know, I get caught up somehow. But there's always a moment where there's nothing except something, me, and the chart. And the person is there receiving it, whatever it is. And it can't last long, because if your personality fragments too much, it's not a good thing. I know I've gone too close to that to know. And any time you're in the astrological, you're looking at charts, you're thinking about them, at some point you can hear what's going on in the collective by looking at the charts, if you're so inclined to do that. When people at the moment, you know, the government, the corporations, everybody's screwing up the world and we're not, but everybody else is doing that thing. And if he did that then, you know, that whole thing. Look at the chart. It's reshaping itself. It's moving in a particular way. You look at the chart and you feel or sense something is going on. And for a moment you can rest. Life is doing what it does. Now, I was looking at this and all of his beautiful drawings, and I ran across that, and I thought, that's not Picasso. Odd, who's that? And then I ran across something this person said. For me, being an artist isn't just about making nice things or people patting you on the back. It's some kind of communication, a message. And I know I'll never be part of society, so why try? That's what's lovely about being an artist. I don't have to. And this person, I don't necessarily like as an artist, but now I'm on her side from saying that, because I'm slightly wary of us trying to get into the center, you know, trying to be Saturnian rather than Uranian, and wanting us to be recognized by the world. I like the outsider position, is that Uranus? And I think you have great freedom outside. We go in the center and serve those in the center. Everyone in this room has done charts for any length of time, and I have served people right in the center. But we then come out. And then we go back in and serve. And then we come out. And I like that freedom. And this person said that, and I thought, yep. This person also said, there should be something revelatory about it. It should be totally new and creative. And it should open doors for new thoughts and new experiences. There should be something revelatory about your astrology. It should be totally new and creative each time you do it. Can't be every time, but you know. And it should open doors for new thoughts and new experiences. Every client that leaves your house, you may have done it hopelessly badly, believe me. I still do it hopelessly badly, according to my own standard of things. I think, oh God, that was hopeless. All you can ask is that person goes away with a clue. It's changed something inside them. They may not even remember you gave it to them. But as long as you're willing to be a moment in their life where something is revealed, then you have to be on the right path, I think. Now this person did that. Did you know? And I went, oh no. Now I have to like her. I was looking for her art, and I thought, I can't put that up, I can't put that up, I can't put that up, I can't put up any of her art. Anyway, but I can put up her chart, Tracy Emin. And what's interesting to me is that she's got Scorpio in the fourth, Leo rising very close to Picasso's, Sun in Cancer, conjunct with Mars in the 12th. It's really interesting. And she's part of the Neptune-Saturn generation. Now, you guys probably would not consider this a square. But I grew up in a more liberal astrological community in the 60s. We made things up as we went along pretty much. And I know she's the late part of that generation. But she is part of that generation, that Neptune Saturn square, and somewhere with that moon in Scorpio, it sort of brings it in, and you see it in her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She reveals huge darkness. Mm-hmm. And I don't quite know what to do about that, because I think it was Vega, or one of the Matisse perhaps, who said that art was about revealing beauty. And I, you know, I agree. But I can't not respect something that she's trying to do. And maybe she's revealing something that is about society and we'd rather not know. I don't know quite. Now, she said, if I think about my mind and myself as a whole, a pomegranate is what I'd like to be. So I thought, well, that's good. But what it did was make me hear. Dante Gabriel Rossetti's Persephone. And to this woman, now look at those, can you see her face? Okay. Look at that face. I'll show her your chart. Again, I just want you to see her face. That's when she's old. Now, she married William Morris. She was picked up. She was 16 and she went to something and Rossetti and somebody else saw her and fell in love with her. And she said, come on, and she did. And she was, her mother was a laundress and her father was worked in the stable shoveling stuff that horses do. You know, nobody, they were really, and she turned out to be, and she was educated by William Morris, and she ended up being very great and accepted into all the highest houses in the land. She really knew how to regenerate herself. This is a non-chart, I don't have a chart. But what I was interested in when I was wandering around is, there it is again. She's got Saturn and Sagittarius and Mars, and squared to Moon and Uranus and Pisces. Moon is somewhere around the squared to Uranus. And I thought, there's that Sagittarius. Pisces came again. And Saturn, Neptune and Saturn are sextile each other. So I thought, it's there again. She had a fantastic life. She lived to be quite old. She did very, very well. And for her children and for him. She had a passionate affair with him, Dante Gabriel Rossetti. They all lived together, Morris, her, and him. They lived in a different world. But now this would not be politically correct the way they lived. She found out he had a drug addiction and she sort of withdrew from him after a while, but she was friends forever till the end of his life. And again, I was wandering around and there it was, Mars conjunct Neptune, Neptune opposition Saturn. I was thinking of what Liz said, and it's true. I know enough people with Saturn Neptune, it puts you on the edge. It doesn't let you feel safe. The Saturn demands that you follow the world and you have respectability and success and all of the things that Saturn demands, and you do it well and the community respects you and you do your work. And Neptune says, yeah, right. Not today. And Neptune calls, please let me be, I want to be out of the world. I don't want this ego ambition. I don't want it. And Saturn says, yeah, you can't. So it forces you. The Queen has Saturn square Neptune. James Hillman has Saturn square Neptune. Richard Attenborough, the wonderful one.
David
Attenborough, he has Saturn square in the Grand Cross. So you can be very safe, but you can't avoid pain with it. You're kept you're kept on the edge of suffering enough of the time so that you have to stay awake, otherwise you fall. And this man fell. He ended up. Okay, now. Here we are. Saturn and Pluto are inextricably woven together between 2008 and 2024. They just are. Capricorn, wherever Saturn is, it's more, you can see it more clearly in collective activities, the activities of the systems that contain us, and in our own selves. I'm saying that you have to pay more attention to it than usual. In other words, you have to be more rigorous where it calls you. So it's in Sag, Scorpio, and Sag again this year. So, on the 23rd of December, 2014, it went in at first at 2:43 in the afternoon. Saturn went into Sagittarius. Right from the beginning, it went into Sagittarius, and everything was in Capricorn. But we'll look at this now. Okay. A few days ago, we had the final of the seven, Uranus squared Pluto, mm-hmm. things.
we're still feeling it, like this morning. But
just beginning to walk.
And I'm not going to speak about it this time. I'm more interested. Saturn goes into Scorpio, back into Scorpio on the 15th of June, 2015, between 5 and 6:30 in the morning. As soon as Saturn went into Sagittarius, my eyes turned to Jupiter instantly. As soon as Saturn went into Sagittarius, because Saturn was in Sagittarius and it was beginning to relate to Neptune and Pisces, and both of them are Jupiter ruled. So I immediately looked to Jupiter. Now, while Saturn is in Scorpio, Jupiter goes into Virgo on the 11th of August 2015. I have it at 11:16, but again, it's a little bit later as well. Saturn goes back into Sagittarius on the 18th of September this year at 5 in the morning. And again, we have to look at Jupiter, but Jupiter's left Leo, and it's gone into Virgo. And the final interesting thing from my point of view is on the 26th of November 2015, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Saturn squares Neptune exact. It's one of her drawings for the illustration. Mike Harding. When Saturn is in aspect to Neptune, then you are born into a time where authority is being undermined on all levels of society, and traditions are threatened in your community by larger social forms coming in from the collective unconscious or taking shape in the spiritual body of humanity. I just think that's so right, or so worth listening to. When Saturn is an aspect to Neptune, then you are born into a time where authority is being undermined on all levels of society, and traditions are threatened in your community by larger social forms coming in from the collective unconscious. So, now, what I'm going to try and do for a few minutes is go back over those dates and just say something about what I'm doing every time I look at them. And I'm saying, this particular astrologer artist, who is more of an artist than anything else, you know, really, I'm not a counselor, and I'm not a therapist, and I'm not a predictor, much. I say, when people come to me or they hear about me, I help navigate periods of time. That's what I can do. And I've noticed, since Saturn went into Sagittarius, I noticed something. I noticed I was less secure. I've been doing it for 45 years, making my living for 45 years by nothing else. So I love what I do and I'm quite secure in it. But every time anyone left, I'd say, I shouldn't be doing this anymore. I just can't do it anymore. It's hopeless. And then I started listening, and I started listening to other things that were going on outside, and I thought, well, that's interesting. I have a feeling that with Saturn in Sagittarius, it may be a time to question things rather than to answer them. That's why, Evelyn, you gave me this quote, I'll read it just now. I thought to myself, and especially because it's going to square in Neptune, I thought because Jupiter is the ruler, it's quite... When I go back to my heart, I'm okay. And my heart responding doesn't have judgments. There are no judgments on my heart, but on my mind and my, whatever you call ego or whatever, lots of judgments and stuff. But I thought with Saturn and Sagittarius, there's something about going on a quest. So I started reading Prospect, but I've only just started, so I can't do much about that right now. So I thought, Saturn and Sagittarius, somewhere on a quest. And then they started doing the free speech and the Hebdo, Charlie Hebdo, and then all the thing about education and da da da. So I'm listening everywhere and I'm hearing Saturn and Sagittarius. What do we do about this? And my husband and I have been talking about it constantly. What about, he's more Uranian than I am in an odd kind of way, though I'm pretty Uranian. But he says free speech above all. And I say, yes, but are people allowed to say horrible things about the things you cherish the most? Is that allowed? Yeah, but that's what we, so we go back and forth. And there's something about the question. I think if we do nothing else, I always say extreme things, but I think if we continually ask questions rather than have answers, It's a very interesting thing to use this year for. Especially when we meet people. I think that it's true about people with cults, you can't do it. And you can tell somebody who's a cultist immediately because they have their opinions just there and there's nothing you can do. But if there's any, I almost thought Socrates, he had Saturn and Sag, by the way, if he's born the year they say he was. Is there a way of asking what's going on rather than condemning what's going on? Is there a way of saying what are they trying to do rather than saying what they should do to ourselves and to each other? Can we use that rather uncomfortable aspect for that? And can we return for rest from the intensity of the year to our hearts? So I thought, as long as Jupiter is in Leo, yes, we can return to our hearts again and again. The way of navigating. Now, I'm going to leave this for the moment. But when Saturn goes back into Scorpio, and it's there for 3 months, I don't know how you all feel about that. Don't you feel it's kind of like, ugh? Do you think, oh, good, Saturn's coming back into Scorpio? That's so wrong. While Saturn was in Scorpio, I was using Medusa as the image. And I was saying, you know, it's a period where people have to, where people get very angry because they're frightened. And if you can track what frightens you, then you're able to free something up inside and purify something. So then when you see other people being angry, you can think, ah, what's that person frightened of? That's interesting, as opposed to reacting instantly back and so. But I think when Saturn goes back into Scorpio, so we can go forward with Saturn and Sagittarius, and where it is, in what house it's in, it's there to ask the questions. There to say, is there a way that I can envision a future, not just for myself, but for those who I hold in my community, for those that I think are part of my world. Is there a way I can vision one? I won't get the vision, but I could ask the question, what do I believe in? What's my hierarchy of values? Do I live by them? Or do I live by a false hierarchy of values and still believe what I believe? Questions are so good at that level. So when Saturn goes back into Scorpio, my thought is that you go back and look at the things that you had to look at if you've been looking while Saturn was in Scorpio about this reacting to people or situations rather than responding. Where do I still react rather than respond? It's worth asking. And in terms of the world, I don't know. Sometimes I know and sometimes I don't. And then, when Jupiter goes into Virgo, my husband says he loves it. Every 12 years he loves it because Saturn goes into Virgo. I mean, Jupiter goes into Virgo. He has a Virgo moon. And he says, and we've known each other several versions of Jupiter and Virgo. And he says, it's really good because it means that things are easy to fix. Because he's having Virgo, so he's having to fix things. Well, I'm so glad he's going into Virgo. I can stop fixing everything all the time. But it goes in while Saturn's still in Scorpio. So it seems to me that when it moves in, I don't know what it does when it's in Scorpio. I'm not quite sure. But I suppose it's just, I have to say I don't know for now. So I'm going to look at this. When Saturn goes back into Sagittarius, from then, you look at Jupiter again. But this time, it's not so much about operating, turning to your heart to get respite or moments free of the collective chaos around and disturbance in yourself or in others. It's about creating rituals, checking out your rituals, making sure that you have rituals and not habits. Because Virgo is about both. If it doesn't have rituals, it has habits. And habits need to be reviewed and rituals need to be reviewed periodically. And since Jupiter is the key of the Saturn-Neptune square, anything that can make you come back and review these things that you just do over and over and over, you do again and again, is freeing up something for you to be able to serve life, to serve yourself in the community. I think since Saturn went into Capricorn, I think it is dangerous to think of oneself apart from the community. And the community is there are many layers of it, the virtual community, you know, I mean, God knows. But I think to think of oneself as just, I must get on, I must take care of me and my family is dangerous. And I also think that with Pluto in Capricorn, anyone who tries to get safe is working against that which is revealing itself. You can say, phew, I feel safe today, that's great. Good, I've got the money to pay for my child's school, phew. But to try and get safe goes against everything that I'm seeing in these planets. It's not about safe, it's about navigating and finding what it is that you think is most important by asking again and again, and losing it, and not knowing anything, not knowing again, rather than holding on to knowing. And it's so important. I had a friend who had Saturn and Sagittarius on an island in Greece, and I used to go to the island every year for 20 years, and she was much older than me, she had Saturn and Sagittarius, and I once said to her, it would have been such fun if we'd known in Nazi Germany. And she said, no, you wouldn't have liked me. And I said, what do you mean I wouldn't have liked you? She said, no, I used to think I knew something then. Now I know I don't. That's why you like me. And I said, that's Saturn and Sagittarius. Because we need to know something. We need to know. But as you get older, my experience with other people like that, you don't have to know so much anymore, because you actually do know that which is worth knowing. And so the last thing is, I'm giving myself 5 minutes. The last thing is Saturn squared Neptune on the 26th of November 2015, about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then Saturn moves freely, I say. Yes, I know it squares Chiron next year, I know, but we'll think about that later. But it goes on to trine Uranus, and trine anytime anything's in fire, you know. But between now and then, it seems to me that if we respect, well, this is the way I'm seeing it, you know, reach up to the, that if we say this year there's a journey to be taken, and it's a journey where, is there a way that by the end of the year we have a small notion of a future that works? There's so much doom around, so much darkness, you know, so much, it's, everything's falling apart, it's not going to work, it's not going to work. It's so tiring, you know, never mind for those of you who have children, God help us. So, and trying to make them safe, get them houses, get money to get them houses, and then they buy. So is there a way of revisioning something about the future, not getting the answer, but just asking the questions. Where are we headed? Where are we going? What is good for education? And the more the questions are there, the less you have to collapse when the answer you've gotten, you see, isn't being honored in any way, or isn't being understood, or working, and the government are doing it all wrong, or the corporations are doing it all. It's something about participating ultimately, absolutely, in the collective choppy waters. I hear myself say that it's a very scrappy year. Scrappy year. And I suppose, you know, when you're looking at a personal chart, you're looking at where Neptune is in the chart and where Saturn is in the chart. But I'm looking at the general thing of it, saying, let it be scrappy. When things don't work, listen. See if you can listen for a minute. Then carry on again. When you think you know something, beware, you're going to find out something that shows you don't know it. So why not start with not knowing again and again? And something grows in your heart and then becomes part of your practice. You see what I'm saying with Jupiter? So, two. One is, Evelyn Gay showed me this to me earlier today, and I'm going to read it to you. She wrote it down for me. Boom. The serious problems in life are never fully resolved. If ever they should appear to be so, it is a sure sign something has been lost. The meaning and purpose of a problem seems to be not in the solution, but in our working on it incessantly. Here this year is, every time I get an answer, I lose interest then. As long as the question is alive, as long as I'm working on it, but I should have solved that by now, you know. I should have got rid of this complex by now. Why do I still have this? Why do I still get terrified before lectures? I've been doing it forever. To be constantly terrified is not a bad thing if it's part of creativity, if it's part of a dance with other people. It's a drag, but it's not a terrible thing. So if we continue, if we don't
you know how many clients I've had that often, well, there's another year. But I've done the work on that already. What do you mean there's another year of it?
Sorry. Go to someone else.
Sorry.
I think that's really good quote. I'm sorry I said it so fast because I'm near the end and I hate people having to sit and see. I have to show you this. I'm working on the whole thing. This, I'm in the V&A. My husband's birthday because it's Pisces. And I'm thinking Saturn, Neptune, Saturn, Saturn, and I run across this thing, and it's a little naked guy shooting a fish goat. And it's a comb. And it's a ceremonial comb with an astrological symbol, and the image on the comb represents Sagittarius shooting a Capricorn. And I'm standing in front of it, thinking, how come people don't believe in me? And the reason I think I was saying to him about Saturn and Virgo, I don't know, what am I going to say about Saturn and Virgo? And it's a ceremonial comb that they used, it's the 9th century, and they used it before a mass or a ceremony. The priest would have his hair parted so that he would come back into balance and he would be in the right relationship. It was a ritual to go forward with the ceremony. So I thought Saturn and Virgo. I thought, I'll get a comb. Course, I thought that. But then I thought, so it is when Saturn goes into Virgo, to pay attention, to turn whatever the questions, the difficulties, the fascinations, the disturbances of the year, to somehow create rituals where there are moments of space where we dedicate ourselves to the service that is most important to us. The last thing is this, because I ran across this again by chance. And it's the last thing. I couldn't believe when I read that. She wrote it years ago. Many people take up astrology in the hope that simple answers will be offered to complex questions about major life issues. But if the person looks more deeply, it becomes apparent that such simple answers are not what astrology is about. Ultimately, those who make a lifelong study of astrology do so not because it offers the reassurance of science, but because they love it. And a large part of that love is invoked because astrology never fails to offer yet another set of mysteries to explore, and yet another set of unanswered questions to stretch our minds and transform our views of reality. Perhaps that is a good definition of art.